plate a potential nugget.
The other thing, Vinay, especially in politics, is often leaders have to take decisions where there's short-term pain, but there is gain over the long term. But people often don't see that. People often experience the short-term pain with greater intensity than they see the upside over the longer term. So what can we learn from Narasimha Rao about moving on those kinds of situations?
Well, I think first is, you know, it's important before I answer this, that just to get to the fact of what you've said, like, it's indisputable today, you know, so many years after liberalization, that, you know, the changes that Narasimha Rao brought about, you know, were unpopular in the short term, but have brought long-term gain to India. That's a fact, right? On the economy, for example, real incomes across percentiles have increased. The poorest Indian is less poor thanks to Narasimha Rao and the policies that followed after. It's not just Narasimha Rao. It's also the Devegowda, Vajpayee, Manmohan Singh regimes. But the shift that he made, right? The same you can say about foreign policy. India is a greater power today than it was in the 80s. It's a fact. Straight up fact, right? You can say that about welfare schemes. India has better welfare schemes today. It has better schemes on health, education. It has certainly more money to deal with these problems than it had, you know, before 1991. So the fact of the matter is that the policies of Narasimha Rao were unpopular in the short term, but have proven beneficial, especially to India's poor in the long term, right? There is a debate on whether inequality has increased. I think the answer is yes. Certain kinds of inequality has increased. It's not alarming at the global level. I think that's a just conversation to have. But we have moved from a situation in which broadly everybody had nothing to eat, when today there is inequality in what people have to eat. And I think that's a fair criticism. But to just talk about that without focusing on the fact that there have been long-term benefits was one of the points of this book, because I think there's a lot of misinformation which is not based on looking at evidence, right? The question was, you know, how did he get buy-in? And the short answer is he didn't. Narasimha Rao felt, and I think he was right in this judgment, that in the short term, Indian voters would punish him. So he chose to lie, right? He chose to be a fox. He would do economic reforms while pretending he was doing nothing. You know, he would say, you know, what am I doing? It's just the IMF, right? Like, he's the only politician I can think of who did something good, but went to extraordinary efforts to hide his fingerprints because it was, you know, unpopular in the short term. In Congress working committee meeting after meeting, when congressmen would be shouting at him saying, you're going away from socialist Nehru, he would say, don't look at me, look at Dr. Saab, Dr. Manmohan Singh, he's the man with the PhD, right? So he would make what was fundamentally an ideological choice sound like, you know, medicine that has to be administered in a clinical, non-political way by a doctor to a patient, right? I think that is genius. So in the you know, the simple answer to your question is he didn't buy in. He didn't trust the Indian voter to try to sell this to them, right? Instead, he lied. He pretended that nothing has changed, right? And in the 1996 elections, he campaigned on the basis of his welfare schemes, not on the basis of economic reforms, and he lost. So the Indian voter has not bought in or did not buy into Narasimha Rao's changes. If they had, he would have been re-elected, right? I think that what he did was arguably correct at that point because it was unpopular and he was too weak to attempt to build a constituency over something that was short-term unpopular given how little power he had. But I think the tragedy has been that many politicians have learned from Narasimha Rao that, look, make changes in India, do economic reform, right? Do foreign policy changes, but don't talk about it. You know, keep it quiet. And I think that that has been one of the negative consequence, that the lack of getting popular buy-in to something that has so obviously brought long-term benefits. I mean, I'm not saying that liberalization has solved all problems in India, but it now has created a qualitatively different set of problems than what we had before 1991. But I think that that's a mistake that Narasimha Rao made, inevitable and necessary perhaps at the time, but something that has left a poisonous legacy.
But that's with the benefit of hindsight, maybe just to pressure test that, when you're at the point of making the decision, how do you convey the 20-year upside on day zero?
Well, you know, there have, you know, I can think of so many politicians, Churchill being the most classic example, Park Chung-hee in South Korea being the other big example, Lee Kuan Yew being the other example, who say that, look, I'm taking a poor country on this modernizing journey. They're going to be short-term pains. But I can assure you this with some guarantee, that your children will have better lives than you do. It takes a certain kind of politician. It has been done, right? But that politician has to have a mandate, has to have the trust of the people. And only then can, you know, the voter say, I'll undergo some pain for you because I know my child's life will be better. Nasimara was an unknown. You know, he had the charisma, as I repeatedly say, of a dead fish. Nobody had heard of him, you know, even after he became prime minister, a few people had heard of him, right? I can tell you that, you know, when I went to Hyderabad, you know, to meet the Narasimha Rao family for the first time, around 2015, and I asked my taxi guy, have you heard of Narasimha Rao? You know, I'm going to his family's house. He's saying, oh yeah, he's the guy after whom that flyover is named. He didn't know who he was, right? So a man like this could not, I don't think would have been able to take, you know, the Indian people along. And I think that he was well aware of that weakness of his, that he would not be remembered. I mean, I can tell you that, you know, before my book came out, I remember talking to a friend of mine who was doing a PhD on India in an Ivy League university. And he was doing a PhD in political science. And I said, look, I'm writing this book on Narasimha Rao. And my friend said, who's he? Right? And this is an academic working on contemporary India, right? So a man like that is not going to lead Indians into saying that, you know, Modi is trying it. Let's see whether it works or not. But Narasimha Rao, no way he would have succeeded. And I think he was realistic enough to know that. So on hindsight, I think he made the right judgment call for his survival at the time.
The key takeaway for me here is that so much of leadership is so contextual. How we think about which agendas to pursue, how we think about driving change, how much we want to communicate what we are doing, and so on. The reality is that there's such a significant information asymmetry between the leader and the masses that sometimes we can't put these things to a vote because they don't have a full nuanced view. I guess that's where the moral obligation of leadership comes in. The obligation to live up to the trust that's been bestowed upon the leader to do the right thing, even though people may not be able to see all the pieces of the puzzle and might punish you in the short term. Thank you for listening. If you're new to the podcast and want to get a sense of the nature of the content that's covered, you might want to go to YouTube and type Play to Potential Highlights from 2017. There, I've tried to capture the key takeaways from my various conversations last year with leaders across disciplines. If you want to listen offline, say during a car ride home or during airplane travel, you could also access the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Savan, and several other podcast apps. In fact, Google has also recently launched an app for podcast listening on Android platforms. If you went to playtopotential.com, you could also have the opportunity to listen to multiple voices curated by topic. To give you a sense, one of the playlists is Resilience. Guests talk about how they cultivated resilience and dealt with pockets of turbulence that they hit in their journeys. If you find the content purposeful, please go to iTunes, rate the show, and share a review. It will help others discover it. Thank you for listening.